Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to a long-awaited episode of The Four Elements. This is your host, Earth. And some of you may have seen a flyer that I sent around in reference to healing grief through ritual. So some of you all know my name is Des Torrance. That's actually my birth name, my government name, so to speak. So tonight, we're going to be talking about grief and healing grief through ritual, and specifically talking about grief as it relates to the wounded African soul. And tonight I have two very knowledgeable guests. I'm very excited to have these two guests on the show. We have Amira. Some of you may be familiar with her. She has been on some of our other shows in the past, and we have Lula as well. So I'll go ahead and let them introduce themselves. So, Amira.
Hi. I'm sorry. I'm just having a little... Hi, how are you? Good evening, and thank you. Technical things here, so I'm just going to get that situated. My name is Amira, and I am a... I am an initiated elder in the Dagra tradition. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. There's a little bit of feedback we're hearing in the background.
And I am an initiated elder in the Dagra tradition.
Okay.
Hello, Amira.
Okay, so my name is Amira, and I am an initiated elder in the Dagra tradition. I have been pursuing... Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so my name is Amira, and I am an initiated elder in the Dagra tradition. I have been pursuing... Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, I'm having a little bit of feedback here, so please forgive me. I'm working through this technical thing here.
Amira, try calling in because you're really having delayed feedback.
Please forgive me. I'm working through this technical thing here.
Yeah, Amira, go ahead and dial in on your phone, and then I'll connect you as soon as you dial in. All right. Hello, Lula?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Hi.
Go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Hi, my name is Lula Christopher, and I'm an initiated elder in the Dagra tradition. I've studied with Elder Maladoma Somme for the last 9 years. I am a graduate of the Indigenous African Spirit Technology class and program with Elder Maladoma. I'm also a certified ritual leader in the Dagra tradition. And I came to this work actually through my work as the founder and executive director of the Boston Black Women's Health Institute. And the institute is dedicated to the empowerment and wellness of women of African descent. Our goal is to promote the wellness of not only our physical body, but our mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being in this world. And I am very honored to be here. We also lead what we call the Sister Circle Network in Boston that really works to give women access to their divine feminine energy and to give them voice and empowerment in actualizing their gifts and bringing them to the world.
Oh, wow.
And I'm glad to be here.
And we are, I'm definitely glad to have you on the show today. I'm really looking forward to really diving into this conversation. And I think we have Amira back. Amira, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, the feedback is gone. That's good.
Oh, thank you. I called in on the phone, good old technology, or modern technology, if you would. So am I okay to go ahead and introduce myself?
Yes.
All right, fantastic. My name is Amira. I like to be called Amira. And I am an initiated elder into the Dagra tradition, currently in the Bakora phase, which is kind of elder in training, if you would, which I went through last July in New York, in upstate New York. And I have been pursuing this path of African spirituality for probably about 10 years. And I am fully invested into supporting anyone, including my brothers and sisters in the African diaspora, to reconnect with our ancestral ways and supporting them through ritual and healing to come to a place of understanding and acceptance and practice within the indigenous African spiritual technologies of our ancestors.
Oh, wow. Well, I want to just say it's an honor to have you on the show. It's an honor to have both of you all on the show this evening. And I am just so chomping at the bit to dive into this topic about healing grief through ritual. So let me just talk a little bit about grief before we dive into the ritual and healing aspect of it. So grief is defined.
Can I just ask you to share a little bit about how you got to this place? We would like to hear a little bit more about you and your journey.
Well, okay, that's fine. So I have been, I've practiced within the Dagra tradition and within the Dagoma tradition over the last couple of years or so. And I am currently studying and practicing with elders to become a healer. And I've worked with Maladoma Somme, and I've worked with, and I'm currently working with some elders in Ghana at the present. And I am definitely dedicated to healing our community. It's one of the reasons I think this is a great topic for tonight, because in healing people's griefs or healing our grief, that opens up access and opens up avenues to other things in life. And from what I can see, grief can actually manifest itself as disease as well, depending on how we carry or how we hold the grief. So very interested in healing and healing around grief itself. That is a little bit about me and how I got where I am.
Thank you.
So let's dive into this topic. So I just want to talk just a little bit about grief. So basically, the basic definition of grief is deep sorrow. So grief can be defined as misery, sadness, anguish, pain, distress, heartache, and heartbreak as well, torment, suffering, dejection, and despair, just to name a few things. There's a long list of things associated with grief itself. And, you know, I did a little research before the show, and I found that, you know, there's approximately 8 million people per year, just in the U.S. alone, who actually deal with grief from, you know, the loss of a loved one, itself. And out of that, there's 75% of children, and I'm very passionate about children, who are suffering from grief as a result of some type of trauma, some type of sadness, some type of detachment as it relates to their family structure. Like one out of five children who actually have dealt with grief in some kind of way have been diagnosed with having some type of learning or emotional or behavioral problem as a result of grief. You know, which 75% is, that's very, very, very high in my estimation. And it also states that, you know, 63% of all suicide individuals actually come from some type of broken home where they're with a single parent. I mean, the broken home could be where there's a death, a divorce, or, you know, the children, their parents were just never married. So, you know, when I saw the number 63%, I was like, wow, it's just a bit blown away by that number itself. So just want to give you just a general look at how grief itself just impacts our society. And I think a lot of times we don't realize that we're being impacted by grief because grief has become such a normal part of our everyday lives. And we see grief and we see people dealing with grief. And, you know, in my estimation, I don't see that we take grief as something that needs to be addressed as though, you know, someone's life depends on them being able to overcome that grief and deal with that grief. And just us dealing with grief as it relates to each other in the context of a community. So I know I've said a lot. So what do you all think about that?
Well, this is Amira, and I find it very fascinating, the statistics that you quoted regarding grief. And I do want to say something about the actual term itself, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, when most of us in modern society think of grief, we associate it with somebody who has died, somebody who has passed, somebody who we have lost. I also did some research myself and recognized that whenever the topic of grief comes up, the psychotherapists and the psychologists and the, let's just call it the mental health community, are talking about somebody died and you're grieving and mourning their loss. So for many of us, that is the first contact or the main contact that we have with the issue of grief. So when we bring that idea, so grief is a very ubiquitous concept, and it's also a very ambiguous concept when we start to talk about the wounded African soul. Because what I have found is like, well, I'm not sad about where I am as a black person. I'm not upset. I'm not angry. I'm not whatever the case may be. I'm okay. I'm doing good. My world is working fine for me. So when you say to me, I'm grieving or my soul is wounded, I cannot connect with that concept, because I don't see it. So here is where I myself launch into this discussion around, first of all, what does it mean to grieve and what does it mean to be wounded? And we could go on forever with this conversation and never come to an end. So I'm just going to try to be as very succinct as I possibly can. So Africans in the diaspora, people of African descent, people who have their DNA connected to people who were enslaved and brought to this continent out of their will,
regardless of where you find yourself currently or how you feel or what your life has been like, you are carrying some wounds, some pain, some grieving that's imbibed and imbued into your DNA. And I'm going to tell you why you are doing that. So, first of all, if we think of the concept of grief, for example, we will say that, well, let's just look at it from the psychotherapeutic perspective. People who, when psychotherapists or psychologists talk about grief, they are referring to the emotions or the reactions around grief. And so they will say something like this: you're either angry, you're resentful, you're guilty, you feel shame, you feel hopelessness, you feel fear, you feel apathy. And those are some of the symptoms that are associated with the grieving process. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross came up with these five stages of grief, which has been more or less refuted among the psychotherapeutic community. So we're not going to go there. We're just going to go with the fact that when you are hurt, when you've been hit, when you've been traumatized, when you've been hurt in any way, shape, or form, physically, emotionally, spiritually, you are experiencing pain and loss. So I want to talk about the loss that is associated with the process of grieving, which is really what grieving ultimately is about, whether you lose somebody that you love or you lose a concept or an ideal. So maybe people will connect better with the concept of loss. And there are many losses in our African-American experience. I could stop there and ask you guys what you think, because I could talk forever about this.
Yeah, this is Earth. I definitely agree with everything you've said, and I would like to add to that. Like, I see grief as a spiritual connection that you've made, or a connection spiritually that one has made with something. And then once that connection is cut, it's like that spiritual energy is going in one direction. It's not going it's not like a two-way street. It's not going back and forth between you and the other person. Or you're giving something to a job, for example, and you're actually getting something back. Whatever you're giving, so that connection is broken. And then when that connection is broken, then there's nowhere for your spiritual energy to go at that point, which causes a sense of loss, as you said earlier. And then when you have that loss, then, you know, people will experience a wealth of emotions that are associated with the loss that exists, you know, which then results in the grieving, certainly. So for me, like, that's my view of grieving. To me, grieving happened solely the root of grieving is on a spiritual level, and it has everything to do with, you know, the spiritual energy, because there are things that we're not attached to, for example, that happen, and it doesn't move us in any direction at all, because we haven't allowed ourselves to become attached to that, because, you know, people die every day. People lose jobs every day. And there are other things that happen to us personally that, you know, may be considered as being unfavorable, but they don't really, the loss of those things don't really impact us, because we don't feel an attachment to those things, for example. But the things we have an attachment to, those are the things that will cause us grief. Because we can't give anything to that thing, whatever it is, or whomever it is, and we can't receive anything from that anymore. So that's my two cents that I wanted to add to what you were saying.
That's very deep and very profound and very insightful. And what I want to do here, Earth, is I just want to get raw. I want to get raw and I want to get real. because I'm hoping that the people who are listening to this, people of African descent who are listening to this, can really connect with what we're talking about. And so I want to let go of the superfluous words and the feel-good nice words, because I am a believer in the realness and the rawness of putting forth what we're going through. So I'm just going to put something out there, and I'm just going to share it and let it go where it will. I want to say this, that as people of African descent, as people whose ancestors are connected to the continent of Africa, as people who have been brought here to this continent called the Americas against our will, and who have faced immeasurable suffering, our soul is wounded. Our spirits are broken. I'm just going to get real here. It may not be something that everybody can immediately connect with, but I hope that in the process of this conversation, it can open people up to say, I feel you, I hear you, I see you. So here's where I'm going to get raw. We endured 500 years of slavery. And then following emancipation, we endured another several decades of laws, segregation, separation, civil rights, and all of those things in our communities. And when you start talking about those experiences with people, the first and foremost thing that you will often hear is, oh my God, it's in the past. Why are you guys bringing it up? Like, you know, like, we've been there, done that. We've had the riots. We've had the war. We've had the rallies. Like, why you guys keep bringing this stuff up? Because we've heard it, but it's not part of our 21st century existence anymore. I am not feeling it because I am personally responsible for my fate and my destiny and my goal in life. This is the new thing that's called personal responsibility. So I want to talk about that. So there's much talk about the fact or the concept that it's in the past, time heals all wounds, the current state of black people in America has nothing to do with the past, we need to get over it, why can't you just get over it, why we need to talk about it, and that we are really basically trying to see ourselves as all one. Let's just get real here, because we're talking about healing the African soul. Now, because we have some very supportive educators, researchers, academics, what they've been trying to do is they've been trying to put our experience in a justifiable format that will allow the mainstream public and those powers that be accept what we have to say. If you and I were to step up, we are not PhD professionals, we didn't go through and have a psychology degree or a medical degree or whatever, let's just be real. So if we step up and say, listen, we're wounded, we're hurting, we're painful, we're pain, and we need to do this and we need to heal this, people are going to say, oh, you're just trying to throw some things, some darts on the table. So who are you? But when somebody steps up and says, okay, I have studied this for years, I can research it and document it, I can show you the analysis around what is going on, because I have the authority, because I studied at Harvard or Columbia or Morehouse or wherever I've studied, and so I want my peers to accept it so that the rest of the world will accept it, which is what is happening right now, that we tend to listen because these people have some kind of accolades behind their name. Our ancestors didn't have it, so who are they, right? But let's just go with those that have the accolades behind their name. They have the PhDs, the doctorates, and whatever. Let's just go with that. So our teachers and our elders and our leaders who are trying to get recognition around what has been happening to us, have been trying to come up with concepts and terminology that the broader population will accept, including their peers. So they come up with stuff like post-traumatic slave syndrome, you know, historical and intergenerational trauma, soul wounds. So we have to go with those because that's what those elders and leaders are forging the way for us to do. So let's go with that. The bottom line is that as people of African descent, we are wounded. And I will just tell you why our ancestors knew this before anybody who claimed that they have some kind of recognition or degree says it. Our ancestors with no degree knew this and said it. They said it in the Sankofa principle. They said it in the fact that we have to go into the spiritual level first because before we can heal the spiritual. But when you come forward with those kinds of ideas, people are going to be like, oh, my God, that sounds so simplistic. Why should I listen to you? But, you know, our ancestors have said this. Every time I have looked at what somebody in the know has said, I've always found a correlation with tradition that has already said it before. But we have to give props because we're in modernity. So our ancestors have said we are wounded. When something happens to us in the past, it carries forward to the future, and we carry that with us, and therefore we carry that pain and that suffering and the anguish and that wound with us. So they knew that. And they give it a name that we may not be able to translate in our modern world, but some of us or some of us who are able to speak the language of the West has translated into grief. So we call it grief. And grief is imbued with emotions because with grief comes certain emotions such as anger, resentment, guilt, shame, hopelessness, apathy, fear, you name it. But one of the biggest emotions that comes with the grief, the feeling of grief, is anger. So research has shown, and we'll go to research because that's what people like to hear. Research has shown, okay, that when anger is internalized and is driven deep into the unconscious, and if it's contaminated by unresolved pain and suffering, it becomes a problem. It becomes a problem. So what happened? Did somebody just sneeze right now?
No, I'm sorry. This is Lula. I didn't see.
Okay. Okay, I just wanted to make sure the answers were acknowledging. Okay, thank you, Lula. So
on the conversation at some point.
Okay. So what happens when the anger that we feel as people who are constantly discriminated against and constantly segregated against, what happens to the anger that's constantly being targeted against a race of people? What happens to that? That's the biggest expression of grief that is felt in our community. I'm going to put that out there, and I'm going to ask you guys to share what you feel about that.
You know, as I listen to you and Torrance, my everything in me start to get nervous because for me it brings up the fact, okay, I am wounded, but if I'm not in academia and don't have a way of expressing that with words or to have an intellectual or philosophical discussion with my colleagues, what do I, as the average person, do with my woundedness when I am in a society that says to me, just get over it, you know, and there's no place for me to express that anger, that pain, and that sorrow? What does that do to my spirit? because then if I don't have a place to express the grief that comes from the pain and the woundedness, then I begin to internalize it and turn it in on myself so it can show up as depression. It can show up as one thing we look at in the health community among health disparities, and we started talking about the angry heart and how heart disease becomes so prevalent in the Black community because it is the internalized oppression turned within. So we see a lot of manifestations of hopelessness and despair in our communities. But what if we had a place where we could go to relinquish and unburden ourselves of some of that anger? Because what we're told to do when we're grieving and is not to cry, not to weep, not to yell, not to scream, because it's not polite. And so we begin to see the manifestations of that despair, that anger in our communities, and we begin to see it generational as dreams deferred. And so we have to look at where do we carry that internalized anger and depression in our bodies and in our souls and in our spirit. And someone said that, you know, what we do is that every day we get up and we put it on as our makeup. We put it on in the armor of the clothes that we wear. It is stitched in the hem of our garments. And so all of that becomes very heavy. So we carry that around. Those things are very heavy, and we try to insulate ourselves. So, you know, we can see it in the high rates of obesity, the food deserts in our community. It all manifests itself in our everyday lives. So grief and our communities is very heavy. And so we need to come to a place where we can talk about that grief, have expressions of that grief, and a place where we can dismantle some of that grief. We talk about it as peeling back the layers of the onion. And so each time we peel back a little more, we can let out a little more, and we continue to peel back those layers until we can get to the place where our medicine lies, so that we as a community, diasporic African community, begin to get to a place where we can heal individually and begin to heal as our families.
Wow. I definitely agree with what both of you all are saying, and I just want to add one thing to that. And when you were speaking, Lula, it reminded me of something that I heard Maladoma Somme say once, and he said that it takes a lot more effort, fortitude for people of African descent to survive today than it took our ancestors to survive, you know, during slavery. And when he said that, I kind of thought about it for a while. I was like, oh, I don't know if I agree with that. So I just sat with it for a while. And the more I thought about it, the more I got what he was saying. And the way that I interpret that statement is that we are carrying all of the grief, all of the pain, all of the experiences that our ancestors experienced. We're carrying that with us today. And that, to me, shows up, that grief thing shows up, you know, in the world, in the ways that it show up. It could be, you know, anger. It could be, you know, violence. You know, however it shows up, you know, the grief is showing up and manifesting itself in a certain way because it's just taking that much more for people to survive, because that's what we're carrying with us on a daily basis. And it's definitely very important, you know, to begin to look at ways to deal with the grief, look at avenues to deal with the grief outside of going. And there's nothing wrong with going to see a counselor or going to see a psychologist or even a psychiatrist for help around grief. So I'm not saying don't do that. But I argue that, you know, since grief to me exists on the spiritual level, it has to be dealt with on the spiritual level and not dealt with solely through conversation, but dealt with on the soul, within your soul, within your spirit. It needs to be dealt with there.
Absolutely.
Wow. So, Lula, you and I didn't talk before this conversation. And I just want to say this, that when I considered the impact of the grief and wounds of our African spiritual, of our souls, you talked about food deserts, obesity, health. I just have to tell you, sister girl, that those were the things that came to me. I just want to say this out loud, that you and I didn't talk about this beforehand. And when you started talking about it, I was like, oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. I'm having a moment here. Okay. So I just want to throw this out there. I looked up some statistics. I just want to throw this out. Let people understand what Lula said when she said about the impact of grief in our African communities on our physical and mental health. So let me just throw you out there, because I took some time to look this up. So there was research that was done on school-aged children. This is children under 12. Between the years of 1993 to 2012. And guess what they found? During that 20-year span of study, they discovered that black children were committing suicides increasingly more than white children. Actually, let me just put it this way. Suicides among black children under the age of 12 increased, while suicide among white children under the age of 12 was decreasing. So I just want people to get this. Okay? Our babies, the ones that we fought to give birth to and that we're trying to raise as productive citizens of this society to overcome the legacy and the history that they have been faced with, are killing themselves on a daily basis more than the white children that they are connecting with on a daily basis. I just want people to think about that for a second. That's one statistic that blew my mind. Like, I was beginning to get tears just looking at that. That's one statistic. And so let's move from our children, because we're going to teenagers, okay? And let me just say, let me just skip the teenagers part, because I lost that particular statistic. But adults, black adults, are more likely to say that they're sad, hopeless, worthless, and depressed than their white counterparts. Black people are now reporting that they have a sense of the world being totally, and I'm going to use the F word, fucked up, more than their white counterparts.
Wow. And so what's the year? And give me that year range again.
Okay, for the children, it was from 1993 to 2012. And the other, for the kids on the 12, that was a study that was done in a 20-year span, that our black babies are committing suicide and killing themselves more often than not. Our black children, under 12. This is not teen, this is under 12.
So when I hear that, the first thing I think about is linking that to a cause, like what's causing that. And the first thing that I thought about was that grief is generally handled within the context of an intact community. That's where it's generally dealt with. And when you have the breakdown of the community, then there's no place to go and there's no support that exists for you to deal with grief.
Absolutely.
So it makes me think about whether or not that has a direct correlation with the rise in suicide and the rise in this this perception of, you know, some black Americans of themselves is not favorable, and looking at themselves in the light is not favorable to themselves or to anyone. And it makes me think about whether or not that is a direct correlation between them.
Absolutely. And the thing about these statistics is that they try not to give you the direct cause, and also they're going to try to give you scientifically, empirically evidence cause. But let me just tell you what I think about modern science. They're just catching up to what our ancestors already know. If there's a breakdown in community, if there's a breakdown with the elders and the family and the people that you turn to in order to get support, if there's a breakdown in the rights and the passages that we go through in order to self-identify ourselves culturally and individually, yes. But they're not going to make those correlations. But if you have the connection with the ancestors and spirituality, you can make those correlations and understand what's going on. And one of the people who do that is Dr. Joy DeGroy, who makes those correlations. And it's not yet mainstream enough for people to say unprecedentedly that that's what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I've read Dr. DeGroy's work, and she's done like phenomenal work. And for the listeners out there, who don't know who Dr. DeGroy is, she authored a book titled Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and she has actually done the research. It's over, you know, 25 years of research, taking a look at why people, I guess, throughout the entire diaspora of African descent, behave the way that we behave. And, you know, it's a phenomenal work, and I recommend everyone go read that book. That book should be on everyone's bookshelf, in my opinion.
So you are, Amira, give us a brief definition of post-slave syndrome, so that the average listener know what you mean when you use that term?
So post-traumatic syndrome, it's actually looking at how slavery impacts people of African descent today. And because of what our ancestors had to deal with, we are actually still dealing with it down from generation to generation to generation. And within epigenetics, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So we're talking about the loss of a family structure, the loss of language, the loss of our culture, including our music, our dance, our song in a relationship to our history so that we can say and know this is where I come from, not just from the continent of Africa, but this is the country, this is the tribe, this is the clan, so that I know who I am beyond my mother and father. So for generations, we have lost the connection to family in a clan, in a tribal, in a community kind of way. And we're carrying forth from the minute we stepped on whatever shore we were dropped off on to now. And the loss of and the disparities that continue to exist in us being able to name and claim who we are, have a pathway for economic and social development and growth, and the abuse and atrocities that were heaped on us because of the color of our skin. And so all of that woven on top and on top, and it looks different from each generation to each generation, but we're carrying it on and burying it deep, but continue to live and grow in a society and the world that don't respect who we are. So is that what we're talking about?
Yes, it's that, and what I want the listeners to really get is that from a biological perspective, the emotion or the emotion of those events and what our ancestors had to deal with, from the loss of language, loss of culture, and all those things that you named, the emotion of that is riding on those genes, and they're passed down from generation to generation to generation genetically.
Ashe. Ashe, I keep wanting to emphasize that, you know, the three of us have not talked about this prior, but as I listen to my colleagues, Torrance and Lula, speak, it is so evident that the experience of being Black in America is something that we all recognize unanimously and consciously, that even without collaboration, we still understand where we all are coming from. So when you were speaking, Lula, and when you started speaking, Torrance, I was like, okay. So I wanted to throw this into the pot, if I would. And Lula, you brought it out so eloquently. And the word, and what I caught on to what you were saying, you and Torrance were saying, was the issue of loss. I'm first going to say that I'm empath, and I can get very hysterical when I start feeling stuff. So I'm right now like the verge of tears right now. So I'm just going to rein it in. But the concept of loss, and when we talk about grief, we're inevitably talking about loss, but for most of us, it's loss of somebody who's dying. But when we talk about loss in an African-American community, we're talking about losses that are not as tangible as somebody who we could see, talk to, touch, hug, kiss, whatever. We are not talking about that tangible loss that they were here today and they're gone tomorrow. Much of the losses that we experience within the African American community are intangible. They're conceptual. Therefore, they are even harder to define and to connect with and for people to really believe in. So I just wanted to kind of hone in on what you guys were saying earlier about one of the losses that we face that causes to grieve, and that is a loss of our cultural identity. and how important that is for us to be able to claim who we are. And I love to share this story. I love to share this story because, hey, I can't do anything else. I'm a born Jamaican. That's the land of my birth, okay? And for the first 18 years of my life, that's where I grew up. So that's where I was acculturated. That's what defined me as a person. So when we are going through our young adult and teenage and adolescent years, those years before we become like fully formed adults are where we establish our first belief systems and our first standards of living in our culture. So I was a Jamaican before I even got to America. And as a Jamaican, I grew up around people who, for the most part, 90% looked like me. So I knew that I was a Jamaican first and foremost. I didn't question my blackness. I didn't question my identity. I didn't have any reason to identify with Africa because I knew that my people came from Africa and landed there. But when they landed there, we all became Jamaican. So we're good. We're good. Our national motto is out of many, one people. But out of many was 90% black. So you got to understand the context from which I'm coming from. So I grew up around a Jamaican identity, knowing that I grew up in this island. This was the culture that I was in. This was the people that I was connected to everywhere I went. If I went to the mall or the grocery store or down the road, whether it was Mr. Chin or Mr. Brown, who was white, or Mr. Kawasaki, who was Jewish, or whatever, I knew we were all Jamaican. That's all I knew until I came to America. And when I came to America, I learned that I was black. Because in America, there was separation of color, which I never understood before in all my life. So I had this connection with a culture that was unique and distinct to me that I could identify with no matter where I was until I came to America. And I started having these names that I had to associate with: black, colored, black or brown, Negro, Negroid, mulatto, all these things that were associated with people who looked like me. And I have to tell you that for several years before, when I came to this country, I was crying to go home. I did not like America. I wanted to go home to a country that felt safe, that felt familiar, that I didn't have to deal with all this separationist stuff and all these issues around differentiation of people. I wanted to go home. I suffered for several years. I wanted to go home. So for me, the whole idea of loss was that when I felt that I was losing who I was, what I identified with as a Jamaican, clear about who I was, that was the first time I experienced grief in my entire life. I never saw somebody die. People died around me, but I would never went to their funerals or whatever. But the first time I experienced grief was when I came to America and lost my cultural identity, or had to reconcile my cultural identity with the culture that I was in. So take that false fact forward that to 20 years later when I went to the continent of Africa itself. And when I went to the continent of Africa itself, and when I was greeted by people again who looked like me, they didn't say, oh, welcome black sister from America. They didn't say, welcome Jamaican sister from whatever. They said, welcome home. Welcome home. And in our discussions with people who were younger than me, when we were talking in very heated discussions about the world and world stories and whatever, all I could hear, all I kept on hearing, and I made note of this, they said, we Africans think this.
oh, we Africans think that, or we Africans expect this. And it blew my mind because I didn't hear we Black people, or we African Americans, or we colored people, or we mulatto people, or we people, island people, I mean Jamaican people, we Africans. And I had to turn to one of the young people. He was about 20-something years old, much younger than I was. And I had to ask him, I said to myself, so, you know, if you go to the east of Africa, they might be lighter skinned than you. If you go to the north of Africa, they might be lighter skinned than you. If you go to the south of Africa, they might have... So if you go across to Madagascar, they might have different color than you. So why do you say Africans instead of Black people? He said to me, because this is a continent of our birth. This is a land of our birth. And so when he said that, I realized our Jamaican anthem, which is, this is the, not the anthem, but a song from one of our reggae artists. This is the land of my birth. I am born Jamaican. I'm a product of the soil. I can't remember who it was, whatever, but we remember singing it when I was younger. And it was the first time that I understood that indigenous people, wherever they are, whether in America, Africa, Asia, Australia, they identify with their land of origin, with their family, with their tribe. In fact, Native Americans on this continent, when you greet them or when they greet you, they will say, I am the son or daughter of XYZ, XYZ, XYZ. Or I am of the tribe of XYZ, XYZ, XYZ. Or I was born in the land of XYZ, XYZ, XYZ. And then it occurred to me, why is it that African people in the diaspora are the only group of people that I have found, anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, that identify themselves by the color of their skin given to us by the colonizer and the perpetrator of that? Why is it that we're the only people who say we're Black? If you meet an Asian or Chinaman, he doesn't say, I'm a yellow man. If you go talk to a Native American, he doesn't say, I'm a red man or a red skin. If you go talk to a white person, he doesn't automatically say, I'm white. He says, I'm Italian-American, or I'm Greek or Jew or whatever, or I'm Jewish-American, or whatever they say. They don't say, I am Black. They don't say, I'm red. And they don't say, I'm yellow. Why is it that we are the only people on this here continent who identify ourselves and associate ourselves with the color of our skin? I'm colored. I'm Black or brown. I'm Negro.
Amira, I could say it's because of slavery that we have no common language. We have no common homeland that we could readily identify. And so maybe, and I'm not putting this on us, but I think that as we learn to embrace who we are, we could make a connection with the fact that we are Black, and that is our connection to each other. And we took the terminology from the slave owner who called us everything but a child of God, and took the concept of Black as an identifier that we could use to connect with each other. And I think that we began to use that to name ourselves. You know, when we talk about the principle of Kwanzaa, there's one called Kuvuchagulia, which is about self-determination, name ourselves and speak for ourselves. I think that, you know, part of that might have been, and this is just Lula Christopher's take on it. I have no historical notes that I'm referring to, but I think as a child of Black Power movement, that was one thing that we could use to connect us in this America as one group of people, because there are people in our communities who will say, well, I don't have a connection to Africa. I'm not African, because they don't have the memory of this whole ancestral thing that we talk about that goes back and back and back and back and back, that connects us to the motherland. But that's my take on it, and I'll leave it at that.
So what I want to do at this part of the show is just really start looking at grief as it relates to coming to a way to deal with grief, to resolve grief in an impactful way, in a way that makes a difference, and not in a way where it's a temporary fix. It's like putting, you know, a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. You know, that's not going to stop bleeding at all. And one of the things I thought about when, you know, both of you were just speaking is, now, sometimes I think about it from a biological perspective, and if you look at possibly healing grief and what that looks like, and then what we're dealing with as it relates to epigenetics, and that's what Dr. DeGruy talks about a lot, is that with epigenetics, it is believed in the scientific community that when you pass down genetically the behavior and the emotions of an ancestor, when I have children, for example, I pass those genes down for at least two generations at the minimum that will be impacted by whatever grief that I dealt with. So in order to stop that, we would have to actually cut that grief off at least the offspring of my offspring, or my grandchildren would be where I would have the opportunity to stop that grief. Because at a minimum, it'll be passed down there, but actually begin to stop it in my children so that they can stop it in theirs. So what I want to talk about now in the show is, you know, how do we deal with grief from a indigenous sort of ritualistic perspective? If either of you want to speak on that, you have the floor.
Well, you know, I think that one way that we can begin to deal with grief is through the art of ritual, not ceremony, but ritual, where we create a sacred space as a community where we can come together in a sacred and a safe place to begin to unpack some of the grief that we are wearing and carrying in our physical body, in our emotional and our mental body. And through ritual, begin to unpack some of that grief so that we can get it outside of ourselves, hold it in our hands, look at it, and put it in a sacred place and let it go, and let the tears flow, because when our tears meet with the earth and the sand and the dirt and the air and nature, and when we can take it back to nature, we can begin to shed some of the layers of armor that we've had to wear to protect ourselves. So if we can release some of it and let it go, then we have an opportunity to be lighter so that we can begin to stand in our rightful places and to see ourselves in those places so that we can live to fight and stand and grow another day.
So in the context of the ritual, like what are some of the results that people walk away with, that you've seen people walk away with, or something within your own personal experience that you've walked away with in participating in, you know, such a grief ritual?
I think people, there are, I can't say what each individual will walk away with, but there's the possibility of walking away with a greater sense of who you are. You walk away feeling renewed and rejuvenated. You walk away lighter with some of the grief that you've been carrying, the disappointments. And I'm not talking about in a historical, I'm talking about like in modern day times when you go to work and you're the only one in that workplace and you have to defend yourself every day. You have to explain yourself every day. I'm talking about that kid who, that young person who is in college trying to get a degree, and all of the barriers that are placed in front of you every day. I'm talking about the activists who are on the front line every day, fighting for social justice, environmental justice, so that they can carve a pathway to equal rights, equal pay, all of those things that we're fighting for, so that there is a place where you can unburden and lay some of this grief down, look at it, throw it away so that you can stand a little lighter, so that you can fight for your family, for you can fight for yourself another day. I don't know how else to say it. But it is a personal journey, and it is a communal journey where we can stand and look at each other and see each other and witness and bear witness for each other as we take the step to renewing our spirit and to reclaiming ourselves and reclaiming ourselves.
Okay. Wow. So if someone went through a grief ritual, is there continued maintenance around that? So would you recommend that the person participate in just one grief ritual and that should take care of them for the rest of their lives, or should they periodically participate in such a grief, in a grief ritual?
Amira, do you want to answer that?
Hello, I'm sorry, I was muted out there for a moment. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So, the question of participating in a grief ritual to me needs to be punctuated with why participate in a grief ritual, and Lula started to elucidate on that, and I just wanted to add to what she said. A grief ritual is not a cognitive process. It's not a cognitive idea. It's not something that you say, well, I'm grieving, and so let's just go do it.
in order to fully experience a grief ritual, I believe you have to be in contact with the story. In other words, the story of why you are here, the story of why you come to grieve, the story of what it is that you are telling. For me, being in ritual space is about bringing that story to the feet of our ancestors who are still alive and still with us, not physically, but they can hear us and they acknowledge what we say to them, to bring that story to their feet, to the doorway of the ancestors, and telling that story in a very profound and a very demonstrative way. So I want to be able to really emphasize that a grief ritual is not just about a thing, that it is about getting into a space where you are in connection with that story. The story that you carry in your bones, the story you carry in your DNA, the story you carry in your blood. And Lula was saying something earlier, and I think I kind of missed it, but I'm going to just try to say back what I thought I heard, is that when we, as an African-American, African diaspora community, because I'm just not African-American myself, so I can't say that categorically, in an African diaspora community, we are carrying some stories inside of our bones that many of us do not realize that we're carrying. We're carrying the stories of people who came before us, their stories that were never told, that were never allowed to be told, that were suppressed and hidden. And there is a saying that says that truth is not for someone who is less than whole. So what that says is, you cannot fully encapsulate the truth if you yourself are broken, if you yourself are wounded. So our job and our duty is to come in our brokenness and bring that story to the feet of the ancestors and say, here, I'm sorry, there's a little bit of stuff going on in the background. It's just distracting for me, so I'll go over again. So we come to the feet of the ancestors, and forgive me if I start making an invocation because that's what I do. We come to the feet of the ancestors and we say to them, listen up, you guys, I carry your blood flowing through my veins. I walk with a message that you have handed down from my great-great-great-grandmother to my grandmother, to my mother, and to me. I come to you because I am facing a situation that's so monumental in my experience that I can't bear it anymore. And because I know that you who have gone before me are still hearing me, I'm coming to tell you this story. I'm coming to tell you that I am walking in a world that does not accept me. I'm walking in a world where I have to fight as a woman to be able to be recognized. I have to fight as a man to have my voice being heard. I have to fight as a child not being bullied and subdued because of the color of my skin. I'm coming to tell you this story, and I'm bringing this to you because I know, because you told me, my mother told me, my grandmother told me, my great-grandmother told me that you're going to hear me. So if you are hearing me, I am telling you this story right now. I am not happy in this world that I'm in, and I'm going to use some words. I'm fucked up. It doesn't work right. We have so much situations that we have to deal with. My brothers and sisters dying in the street in front of me, and I can't do anything. The policies and the laws in my society don't support me fully. And you brought me to this place because when you accepted the call to take yourself on that boat, because you accepted the call,
or else we wouldn't be here. When you accepted the call to come into the space, you knew I was going to be here. So this is what I'm telling you right now. I cannot carry this burden anymore with me. I am falling under the weight of the stuff that you have deposited on me. And somewhere along the line, you said to me, I need to stand up and speak to it and be able to show it to the other people that are looking at me. And I'm telling you that I can't fucking deal with it. So I want you to step in right now into this space, and I want you to hear what I have to say. It doesn't work for me what you have given me. I can't survive under the weight of what you have given me. I'm suffering, and I'm barely making it. My legs are shaking. My hands are shaking. My knees are fallen. Every time I get up, I get fallen down. I fall down 7 times, but I get up 8, but I keep falling down. So what I'm saying to you is, I'm not doing this because I have nothing else to do with my life. I could do a lot of other things. But I'm doing this because you have called me and said to me, wake up, Amira, Lula, Torrance, and whatever else name you are giving to yourself, wake up and stand up and do something about what you see. And so I'm coming to you with what I see, and I'm saying to you, what I see is unacceptable to me. And I need you to fix this shit because I cannot go on another day with what I am carrying around with me. And if you want me to survive and look like I am strong and look eloquent walking around in the flesh that I took on, then I need you to step forward with all your might and your power and call all the forces, the grandmothers and the grandfathers, to come and stand beside me and in front of me and behind me so that we can fix this stuff, because my brothers and sisters are falling in front of me. They're dropping like flies. They're dying. They're not surviving. And I'm barely trying to pick them up. And that is not acceptable. That doesn't look eloquent. That doesn't look handsome to me. And the time is now for you to say to me, I've got your back, Torrance, Amira, Lula, and whoever else you call yourself. I've got your back, and I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to push you up. I'm going to hold you up by your back, by your shoulders, by your arms. I'm going to walk with you, and I'm going to give you what you need. And until we begin to make that prayer, we begin to make that invocation to the other world, until we understand that we need to demand of them restoration and reconciliation for ourselves walking in this flesh, we are merely just trying to pacify the reason why we're here. That's my story.
And all I can say to that is, Ashe, Sister Amira. And once you make that invocation and that prayer, Spirit steps in and moves in and transforms that story and transforms us in that sacred space. And what the outcome of that is Spirit moved and Spirit filled, and what each person will walk away is a knowing in their bones that they will carry forth to their homes, to their community, to their children, to their families, and start to be whole.
Ashe. Wow, that was very, I can't think of words to describe it. That was very, not enlightening, it's very profound. And, you know, just for the listeners and for me to hear, you know, what, you know, such an invocation would sound like in petitioning, you know, our ancestors around grief itself. And that's actually a very good place to sort of, you know, stick a pin right there in the book, because we're coming up on the end of our time for the show right now. And that would actually be a really good topic, you know, for another show, around grief and, you know, petitioning our ancestors around grief and why would we do that? Like, what does that look like, you know, for us in our everyday life, you know? And, you know, what are we dealing with because we don't position our ancestors around assisting us in dealing with grief, just dealing with life in general itself. So with that being said, I want to give both of you a chance to give some closing remarks as we've actually come up on the end of the show. So, Lulu, would you like to give any closing remarks?
Hadn't thought of a closing remark, Torrance, but why are we doing this? Why are we having this show tonight, and why are we talking about grief? Because in the coming months, we are holding grief rituals in the Atlanta area, and we would like to invite people to begin to think about this process, invite them to a community grief ritual, and so that they can have an opportunity to experience what we're talking about and coming together as a community to release, relinquish, and let go of some of the grief that we're holding and we're carrying in our bodies, in our soul, in our psychic being. Amir, I'm going to ask you to talk a little more bit about that in your closing.
Well, I echo what you said, and that, you know, we are trying to bring forward as a community of, as a group of ritual leaders who have been touched by the indigenous African spiritual technology of ritual, to bring this forward as a way to begin to heal the wounded African soul. And I'm not going to be sarcastic, but I can't help it because that's my nature. We have tried policies, we have tried politics, we have tried rallies, and we have tried all kinds of movements. And one of the things that I see that we have failed to do is to try ritual. African-inspired, African technology rituals. So I am just saying that if we haven't found the solution that we're looking for yet to bring equality and justice and reconciliation to our communities, perhaps what is missing is the medicine of our ancestors, which we have vilified, demonized, and denied for so long, and perhaps we need to relinquish our perceptions around it and begin to understand the value and the benefit of bringing the healing wisdom of Africa to our communities to probably solve the problems in our communities.
Ashe, Ashe, Ashe. Stated, and you know, in us dealing with grief, and you know, we may think sometimes that we're not dealing with grief, but if we think we're not dealing with grief, we are dealing with it. And as a matter of fact, grief is dealing with us because we are grieving a lot of times and not being conscious or aware that we're grieving, and you know, we may behave in a way that's unbefitting of who we are, who we know ourselves to be. And that grief that we're holding, the grief that we have accumulated in our lifetime, and it's grief that we has been accumulated over generations upon generations upon generations of our ancestors. And we're carrying that grief on a daily basis. And as Lula and Amir stated, that we collectively are looking to bring African indigenous technology to our community as a way of dealing with grief and dealing with other issues that we may be dealing with. Because as Amira stated, we tried a wealth of other techniques. We tried techniques that were created by other cultures. And as we can see, you know, we kind of get a mixed bag of results. And so I'm always with the mindset of, well, why don't we try something that we haven't tried? Why don't we try something that our ancestors have done and that obviously worked for them for thousands and thousands of years, and it still works for them today. And, you know, why don't we just try that and see how that works, because we tried everything else. So in the upcoming months, we're definitely going to send out invitations and just invite people to come out and participate in a grief ritual so we can start the healing of our communities, the healing of our families, and, you know, the healing of ourselves so we can see ourselves for who we are and who we are to our families. We show up differently there and we show up differently to ourselves. In the way that we've been, that we were intended to walk by. So with that being said, just stay tuned, because we will definitely be posting additional shows to talk about this topic as we lead up to the actual grief ritual itself. And so I want to thank both Amira and Lula for participating in the show and for graciously giving up their time tonight. And thank you, the listeners, for giving up your time and just tuning in to listen to what we have to say tonight. So with that being said, I bid everyone a good night and sleep well. It actually gets kind of late spending over the floor. And just stay tuned because we'll definitely be sending out additional invitations for other shows. Have a good night.
Good night, and thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. Have a good night, everyone. Appreciate your being present. Ashe, and God bless.
Ashe.